Syria now is facing a tremendous challenge. On the one hand, you have those who want to intervene, who say it is time for the United States to get involved, to begin to aid the opposition with guns, technical assistance, and money. And then there are those who say, wait a minute, it is simply a civil war. And the question remains, in the minds of those of us who are students or followers of international politics, what is the end game for the United States? Is it that we want to isolate Iran? Because if you know geography, you know that if we take Syria out, major ally of the Iranians and a major sponsor, we get rid of Hezbollah, who fight in Lebanon, who, by the way, do an enormous amount of philanthropic work as well, and educational and social. We kill two birds with one stone, and then we serve our Israeli friends, and we serve ourselves. We take care of Iran, we move them, we isolate them. And we're already doing that with economic sanctions. But by taking Syria out and making it ineffective, we effectively isolate Iran. To discuss these issues are two people. One is, I have it here, Professor Stuart Scharr, who's Professor Emeritus of Middle East and North African History at Brooklyn College. How are you, Professor?
Good to hear you, Felipe.
Well, thank you very much, sir. Also with us is Russ Baker. We'll be talking about, he is very interesting gentleman. He's an editor of WhoWhatWhy.com, an author of the best-selling investigative history of the Bushes, Family of Secrets. Also, he'll be lecturing at the Mid-Manhattan Library this Tuesday, April 24th, at 6:30. How are you, Russ?
I'm good. By the way, April 24th is not this Tuesday. It's a couple of weeks from now.
Okay. All right. That's right. Forgive me. It is a couple of weeks from now. Professor Scharr, what's the end game with Syria? Should we go in? Should we not? As remember, we've already had two ill-fated excursions. Excursions, nothing. We've had two ill-fated wars, one in Afghanistan, the other in Iraq. We did horribly in each. And now we're talking, and we supported Libya from the back, with drones and with support for NATO. What is our end game in Syria, sir?
I think that the international community, including the United States, is blocked in Syria. The Russians and the Chinese do not want international intervention. Syria is the last secular state standing in the central part of the Middle East, and the Russians and Chinese want to preserve it as its major ally in the region. In addition, the Russians don't want people poking into their business in Chechnya and in Georgia, which they've recently had wars with.
Yeah, they can't stand Georgia.
Continuing in Chechnya.
Yeah.
The Chinese don't want intervention in Tibet, and therefore both are blocking any intervention.
You mean for fear that we would
come from the security?
Are you saying that
of the UN?
Are you saying that for fear of international involvement in Chechnya, which is a Muslim republic, and in Tibet, which is Buddhist? You're saying that they're afraid that there'd be intervention in those areas?
No, it would set a model. It would set a pattern, and they don't want to set that up. In other words, they don't want. They don't want intervention in the internal affairs of other states. They thought that they were had in Libya, and they were very angry at the way that NATO intervened there. It turned out to be an intervention to overthrow the regime, and they don't want that to happen in Syria.
Russ, what's your feeling? How do we look as Americans, as people of color, as progressives, how do we look at Syria in a fairly objective way? In terms of realpolitik and international strategy, What is the American interest in Syria?
Well, that's exactly the question, because, as you may know, on whowhatwhy.com, we looked very aggressively right from the beginning at the intervention in Libya, and what we saw was an effort by the Western allies, initially not the United States, but rather France first, and then all of the others piling in, seeing an opportunity for self-gain and to basically ride legitimate aspirations that we saw in Egypt and in Tunisia to create uprisings that benefited the West. We saw that first in Libya, and I believe we're now seeing that in Syria, that what is going on is really rather simple and is not practically being discussed at all, and it is this, that the United States, along with the Gulf monarchies and Israel, see an opportunity once and for all to sweep out all troublemaking regimes. That was Libya, that is Syria, and of course, ultimately it is the most powerful and important one, and that is Iran. And so we see this Shiite versus Sunni battle being stoked. I think that the agenda in Syria, very simply, is that Syria is next to Iraq, and is an ally of Iran. They want to get rid of Iran. And what they want to do is, because they've been forced to move the troops out of Iraq, the way to protect the very, very valuable petroleum production in Iraq is now to put troops into Syria.
So you're saying that the objective is to isolate Iran, really?
Well, that's correct, and eventually to remove the regime there. I mean, look, all of the discussions that we see, for example, the New York Times today about Hezbollah versus Hamas and so on, they always elide the central issue, which is when you are Hillary Clinton or you're the CIA or anything, your responsibility, your job is to look after American interests. And the talk is always about something else. It's always about, you know, complex strategic maneuvering and so on. It's really not that complex. It is all about oil.
Professor Shah, do you agree with that?
There's something going on which confuses most people when they look at Syria. First of all, Syria hasn't troubled Israel since the war of 1967. They haven't lobbed any missiles in. Certainly they've supported Hezbollah and Hamas with Iranian aid, but they themselves have been very cautious. They even asked Israel if they would sign a treaty with them, which would, in effect, establish a peace in return for the return of the territory that Israel took in the 67 war, namely the Golan Heights.
Yes.
So that Israel has mixed feelings about Syria. On the one hand, they've created a stable frontier, and that is extraordinarily important, especially since this last week, the Egyptians, one doesn't know exactly who did this, lobbed missiles into Eilat in the southern part of Israel. That's brand new. So
this happened this week
in Syria.
It happened this, Professor
Sharp.
Professor Sharp, you're saying that the Egyptians lobbed missiles into northern Israel?
Into Eilat, which is the southern zone.
Southern zone.
It's a beach resort.
Yes, yes, I know.
And it's the first time that's happened in years, and it's the first time that something like that has happened
in years, in decades.
Yes, under the new regime in Egypt. I'm not saying it's the government that did it, but the fact that it happened is a significant new factor.
What, Russ, do you think is the end result, and what do you think will be the culmination of this Arab so-called spring? Do you think we will end up with, as some State Department Arabists say, a group of young men and women who just want to forge their sovereignty, further develop their identity and their technology? not as interested and not as passionate and not as anti-Israel as their predecessors, and just want to be able to live free and whatever that means, and be able to take care of their nations? Or do you think it will become, as some are predicting, particularly the far right, some presidential candidates as well, who are of the Republican ilk, that it will become a cabal of anti-Israel, anti-West Muslim fanatics, Muslim extremists, who will join in a coalition against Israel? What do you think?
I think it's very, very hard to predict how those particular issues will play out, because I believe that a lot of that is manipulated by concerns about grabbing natural resources. That, I think, is the key thing, is to keep your eye on that. That's the whole history of that region, is the history of Western countries coming in and seizing those resources. And another one, of course, is water. Syria is very important in terms of hydropower.
Yes.
That, I think, is where we've got to focus, because all of these animosities, the Israeli-Palestinian situation, the Shiite-Sunni thing, are largely stoked on the basis of grabs of resources. And I think that, and if we don't keep focused on that, I think we lose our way. And
we get caught up in sectarian, religious, nationalistic, jingoistic stuff, as opposed to looking at resource wars, water, which is the next wars, I think, are going to be fought over water, not over oil.
Yeah, Felipe, what I'm getting at is that we, our own country, we are the cause of so much of this strife. And I think that a lot of the policy is dictated by corporate America, by Wall Street, and by the oil companies that are some of the most profitable corporations in America. But the media just completely ignores that, and they talk about it as if all these are sort of odd, exotic things going on, but they're not exotic at all. That, by the way, you know, we did an article on whowhatwhy.com about questioning actually why Israel even wants to get rid of Iran, because if you talk to the right people in Israel's structure, they will tell you that they don't consider Iran likely at all, that the possibility that Iran would ever launch a nuclear attack on Israel close to zero. And if that's true, then why is Israel being described as being aggressive toward Iran? We believe that the evidence shows that Israel is in that sense simply being put up to it as a surrogate on behalf of Western oil interests.
Professor Shar, you're now Professor Emeritus at Brooklyn of Middle East and North African Affairs in Brooklyn College. You have seen the spectrum of history. You have seen how the West has tried to control the fossil fuel resources of the Middle East, starting with the House of Saud. Starting with Lawrence of Arabia, actually, we started getting involved in this mess. People saw it as romantic. I saw it as an attempt to control oil, Britain's control of it, and to keep it from the Germans. Why is it, and if you, in your wisdom, in your sagacity, if you will, why is it that we are not looking to alternative fuels? Don't we see Armageddon? Don't we see what we're leading ourselves into as Americans? You are in Morocco now. You have a perspective now on the United States that many of us may not have, because we're myopic. We're mired in our own self-interest. What is it about us that doesn't allow us to see the new?
There's a great deal of activity going on with alternative energy sources. I just lectured to Siemens, the large German multinational, in Casablanca. And they have a project going on in the Sahara to create sun energy and to meet 20% of European needs, in addition to supplying a country such as Morocco with its fuel needs. Excuse me. And there is an entire area along the coast of Morocco where they're building wind power and harnessing that. And this is going to be one of the biggest future sources of energy in the 21st century. So this is all beginning to take place with multi-billion dollar investments. The issue, however, is that for the immediate, the world depends on petroleum and gas. And as long as that happens, as our other guest mentioned, it's going to be the driving force of U.S. national interest. And I stress U.S. rather than other countries, because the role of the U.S. has been traditionally and continuously to protect the oil supplies to Western Europe, Japan, and other areas of the world that it represents a hegemonic power. And in the form of hegemony, you want to control the oil resources so that Saudi Arabia is immune to criticism when it's probably the most conservative, probably the most tyrannical regime in the region, and yet not a beep out of the United States about what's going on there. And that's because it has so much oil. Iran was a semi-possession of the United States under the Shah. The CIA representative in the country had an office in the Shah's palace, and the Shah reported to the CIA representative every Thursday, which means, in effect, that the U.S. was controlling major areas of Iranian foreign policy and even domestic policy while the Shah was there. That's the reason that the U.S. claimed they lost Iran. They never had Iran, but they claim they lost it.
Yes.
So that I agree that oil and gas are motivating factors in policy. But I think we also have to bring into the picture the international geostrategic interests in the area, and they aren't always the same for the ex-Soviet Union, Russia, and for China, and for, on the other hand, Western Europe and the United States.
Russ Baker, final question. If you look at what Professor Shah is talking about, if you investigate it and scrutinize this hegemonic need for power, you're looking at two others. You're looking at Mother Russia, and you're looking at China, both of whom are looking to increase their oil revenues and to increase their control. In Russia's case, it's gas, and they're doing very well with that. To Europe, that was the whole Georgia dispute, and using gas and gas distribution as a political tool. You look at China that's now involving itself in Africa, Zambia, building Chinese enclaves in these places, to the consternation of many of the people, not the leaders who are receiving Chinese money and putting it in their pockets in many cases, but and also in South America. They've established very solid relationships with oil-producing countries in South America. How does the United States begin to worm itself out of this fossil fuel morass it's in, and move into something else, into hydrogen, for example? We know we can extract power from water. However, it's very expensive. What is it about our greed that doesn't allow us to put DNR money, research and design money, into changing this race to hell, if you will? Russ?
So basically, this comes down to our system of how we finance politics. We're the only country in the world that has the power balance that we have in the U.S. Senate, where a tiny state like Louisiana, which is almost entirely dominated by the oil industry, has two senators, and California has two senators. And so California may be much more inclined and may much more benefit from alternative energies, but Louisiana is going to go down fighting for the oil industry. And so it is structural problems with our own system. And if you want to be in Congress, you've got to play ball with the oil industry. We must restructure our campaign finance system, or we are never going to get out from under the control of the old dirty fuel industry.
Boy, oh boy. I want to thank all of you, both of you, for having been part of the program. Thank you so much. This, for me, has been enlightening because it's allowed me to at least get a perspective, a real perspective on where we're going with this. Take care of yourselves. Happy Easter to both of you. Happy holidays. Today is Passover. To our Jewish friends, comrades, loves, happy Passover. Thank you, Professor Shar, and thank you, Russ Baker.
Thank you.
A pleasure.
All right.
Speak to you again. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much, sir. It's WBAI.